I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
John, I know that you are on this sort of musical exploration tour right now, and you're listening to some stuff that you haven't listened to before. And that ties into something that I kind of thought about a week ago. I keep talking about the country music thing from Ken Burns. And
right.
It's because I watch it with Mom. And they keep – I don't know how many episodes of that there actually are. I think it's about 500 million because every time I sit down to watch it with Mom, it's a different episode. And I'm like, holy crap, how many episodes of this thing can they possibly have? So the most recent one that we sat down and watched was actually a week ago. And it was kind of sort of outlaw country. So it was talking about the rise of Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson and how they did things. And, Waylon and Willie, they wanted their studio albums to sound like their live performances. But that was not the Nashville way. The Nashville way, the Nashville music, the sound was a very kind of polished, twangy. You know, they always used the same musicians. It wasn't your band. Your band wasn't the ones playing the song. You know, it was the studio musicians.
It was like the country version of Motown and the Wrecking Crew and everything. Yeah,
exactly. And that was really bugging them. Like they wanted something different. And Willie was getting very frustrated with Nashville. Waylon was very frustrated. He managed to renegotiate his contract and got it put into his contract that he got to, number one, pick the songs that went on an album. Nashville did not get to tell him which songs got put on the album. And he got to produce it himself with his own band. Well, once he did that, it opened Willie's eyes, and Willie managed to negotiate the same contract. And he immediately went in and he did like a very stripped down album that was The Redheaded Stranger,
which is probably his most well-known successful album.
Yes. And here's the tie-in for everything. So they did an interview with the one of the producers or something at the record company, and he said, so Willie goes into the studio and he does this album, and we listen to it, and we're sitting there going, this is the worst piece of crap that's ever been produced on the planet. This is just terrible. We cannot release this. And he goes, everybody in the room agreed, we can't release it. It's just terrible. No one will ever listen to it. And I put forth the idea, let's go ahead and release it. Just to appease Willie. And then when it's a complete and total failure, that will give us the power we need to bring him to heel and to do things our way moving forward.
Right.
And he looks at the camera and he says, and I was completely wrong. Because to your point, that became a hugely successful album for Willie Nelson. It's probably one of his best knowns. He got write-ups in Rolling Stone. He hit the top of the charts in not only – like it was a crossover, right? So he hit not only the country music charts but also the other charts, rock and roll, pop, all this kind of stuff. It was a crossover hit. Everybody loved that album. And it was a concept album too because it tells – throughout all the songs, it tells the story of one person, the Redheaded Stranger. And here's where I tie it all back to the original thing about you exploring music. It made me think, it's like, I have never listened to The Redheaded Stranger. I've never listened to that album. I probably have heard songs from it and I just don't realize it. I haven't looked it up, but probably like Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain is in there. And I know that song. Mm-hmm. But what it made me think about is not just music, but also books and stories. There are so many books, stories, you know, short stories, everything, music, albums, songs that are out there that I've just never heard or experienced. And I don't even know if there's enough time to really go out and experience all of them. But I definitely want to try and try mm-hmm. different things. And one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past on the show is how difficult it gets the older you get to find new music, explore new music. I kind of feel like there are classic things out there that I've never listened to that I probably need to, like the Redheaded Stranger.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And the way, yeah, like finding new, that you don't even need to find new things to you, because like you said, all these classic things,
yeah,
that maybe you know the hits, and for whatever reason, you know, it's, we grew up in a time where if other than the radio hits, you would have to buy albums or borrow an album. And that was not an insignificant cost. You know, if you bought you and I grew up at the time of where, when we started buying music, it was cassettes already. I know there was still vinyl out there, but for the most part, we were buying cassettes and then later CDs. It was at least $10 a pop. And when CDs for a while, CDs got quite expensive. I mean,
yeah.
I remember in New Jersey, CDs were like up to like $18-19 at a time, which was so crazy that they were charging so much for that. But the point is that you had a limited budget, and you know, it's, if something didn't just blow you away, you tended to save your money to buy the albums by bands that, or artists that you already liked, or that just, you know, you heard a single and you're like, I got to get this album, I got to check it out, or a friend had it. And, you know, you're also very influenced by the people around you, whether it's your friends or siblings or family members or what have you. You know, nowadays, because we all have access to entire catalogs of any band or artist we'd like, you can explore it without it being a big financial hit. And what I'm kind of going through now, I've been talking a lot about the Grateful Dead over the past few months. I've gotten really into them. I think even as much as it's the music, it's because I've watched a bunch of documentaries. There's quite a few of them out there on the Grateful Dead. I've read like 5 books now. And I find by reading the books and watching the docs and talking to people about it and, you know, reading Wikipedia pages and things like that, placing the music in a context really makes it a richer experience and makes you enjoy it and appreciate it more. At least that has been my experience, because I would always just hear the Grateful Dead and be like, ah, whatever. Like, it doesn't offend me, but it's, you know, it's not for me. And now coming at it from a different context, again, I mentioned a totally different thing, but in our last episode with Tosca Lee, I mentioned that Way of Zen book that I read and how a lot of times you have to kind of keep approaching this stuff and working through it and coming back to it. And I think with music, it's the same way. You know, you mentioned Willie Nelson, like you've heard Willie Nelson songs before, you've seen him on TV, you know, your mom likes country music, you like country music. It's not like you don't know anything about him, but you never spent a lot of time with the albums.
Right. No, yeah. It's always been on the road again.
Yeah.
You can't wait to get on the road again.
And sometimes these things get so overplayed that it's you don't get why people like it so much. You're just like, yeah, I don't get it, man. Like, why? But if you get deeper than that and you get sort of their beginnings. Again, another thing, talking about Tosca, she was, and again, I think she mentioned, I don't know if she mentioned this on air or off, but I think it might have been off air, but she had mentioned, you know, that she liked the format of the show because she got to talk about what she liked and she didn't have to talk about herself the whole time. She got to talk about the books and TV shows and music that she liked, and she enjoyed that, and that was great. I think when you watch these docs and read these books about people, artists, you realize that all of them were fans of something first. So I don't know what it is with Willie Nelson, but with the Grateful Dead, it was like they had a pretty wide variety, but you know, they were really into blues guys and they were really into bluegrass and they were really into folk and they were, and you know, I've recently just started getting into the Rolling Stones. So they were like all about like Howlin' Wolf and like all the early classic blues guys. And so when you sort of see these people as fans and not like the guys that sing Satisfaction, you sort of relate to them a little more. And you're like, oh, this is where they're coming from. They didn't just appear in 1965 with satisfaction. And now they were like young music fans that loved the music so much that they learned how to play their instruments and they did this and they did. So it's you sort of sense the authenticity more, and you end up listening to the albums and you hear songs that you never heard before because you know all the hits, but there's lots of other songs and albums and things out there. And I find that's what I like about exploring a new artist.
Yeah. And to your point about listening to the album and hearing songs you never heard, you may not have heard because they weren't hits. They weren't released as singles.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the albums in that time period, and I'm saying like the 60s and 70s for the most part, are concept albums.
Right.
So the whole thing goes together. And if you listen to it from start to finish, you have a completely different experience than just listening to a song here or there.
Do you know what year or approximately what year the Redheaded Stranger is out? Is that the 60s or when is that?
Oh my gosh. See, I'm not sure. I want to say 70s. I can look it up.
Could be.
So I'll look it up while you're talking.
Yeah. Well, and one of the reasons why I'm now kind of exploring the Rolling Stones, I've made a couple of attempts at the Rolling Stones in the past. And I never hated them, but it just did never enough for me to go out and buy the albums. But about a year ago, I made an attempt and listened to some of the albums, not like super intensely, not for a long period, but for a couple of weeks, I was kind of exploring what I had heard were sort of their classic albums. But it didn't stick for too long. And one of the reasons I'm getting interested in them again is, again, it's a lot of the people that are in your life. So as I mentioned before, I'm playing upright bass and I'm part of this music community in the town that I live in. And there's some really great bands and everybody, kind of sits in with each other and plays at the open mic. So I've done a little bit of open mic playing and I went to this one jam that's at this guy's house, which was one of the best musical experiences I ever had because I brought my bass and there was like sort of a house band there of one of the main bands. And it was like 75 people there. And a lot of people were there to play, but a lot of people were there just as music fans and people that are in this community. And it was great because it was only me and one other bass player that were there, the guy who was in the house band. And we essentially just alternated all night. And so I got to play with like all these people that I've kind of been hanging out with. And it was the first time I played with a lot of them. And it was great. But to bring it back to the Rolling Stones is, I have a good ear. And so even if I don't know the tune, if I can kind of look the guitar player in the eyes and look at his hand, like I could pretty, after they go through a verse and a chorus, I could pretty much figure it out. And I have a good enough ear and good enough musical training where I can then, follow along and play pretty well.
Sure.
But I'm trying to, whenever I go and see any of these local bands, I really try to listen to what tunes they're playing. And I have an ongoing playlist. The town I live in is called Morristown. So in my Google Play Music, I have this thing called Morristown Covers or Morristown Songs or whatever I have it. And while I'm listening to the band, if a band plays a song that I like, or just I'm like, I've heard this song a couple times, because they play covers. And I'll drop it in this playlist. And so when I'm home practicing, I'm trying to learn these songs. I'd like to get the catalog of tunes down. So when I find myself in these positions at jams and open mics and things, when everyone's like, hey, what should we play? Well, I kind of know the more songs I learn, the more opportunities I'll have to play with people. And it's a better experience. Again, even though I have a good ear, when you're just like kind of looking at someone's hand and trying to follow along and everything, you're kind of by the seat of your pants and you're kind of holding on for dear life, just pumping out the root notes. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if I know the tune, then I can be much more musical about
sure.
it. I don't have to just like, I can do a little fill or something a little more interesting or just, really kind of, you can get, obviously, if you know what's going on, then you can play better. So I'm just trying to like learn tunes. And I bring up the Rolling Stones is that people do a fair amount of Rolling Stones songs. Like they pop up. So I'm just like, I've been learning some of those tunes just because like, yeah, I like Dead Flowers. That's a good song. I've heard it before, but I wouldn't necessarily describe it as like one of their bigger hits. It's a good song. And so I learned it. And then I learned Wild Horses. And
I was going to say, at some point I learned Wild Horses. I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, I like these songs. So it made me want to, you know, go and it's funny because the Grateful Dead actually covered a bunch of Rolling Stones songs too. The Rolling Stones come out like a couple of years before the Grateful Dead. So they were kind of contemporaries and so it's kind of connected as well. So
sure.
Yeah, so it's nice. And again, it's all like kind of context. So you were looking up the Redheaded Stranger. Did you find anything else?
I did. Yeah, it was recorded in January of 1975 and released in May of 1975.
Okay. So that's a little later than I would have expected, but I didn't know what I was expecting
It's also his 18th album.
Wow.
Yeah. So 17 albums were produced by Nashville, essentially, right?
Wow.
It's the Nashville kind of thing. And then when Waylon got his contract renegotiated, Willie did the same thing and was able to do this album.
Yeah. That's so funny. And there are pictures of Willie Nelson, if I recall, where he's got like the short hair and he's like wearing a suit.
Yeah.
And stuff.
So that was the other thing that bothered both him and Waylon is that there was a certain expectation of how you were going to look. You were going to be clean cut. You know, you were going to dress a certain way. And these contracts and the ability to produce the albums wherever they wanted, they didn't have to do it in those particular studios that Nashville used. Meant that they could go somewhere else, and they both did. Mm-hmm. And in the documentary, it talked about the fact that, you know, Willie went back to Texas and found that there was this whole almost like a country counterculture going on where people were playing completely different songs and different styles of music, and he just fit right in. He loved it. And that's when he started growing his beard. That's when he started growing his hair out, just like Waylon started growing his hair out. And, you know, and that's why they became, quote unquote, outlaw countries, because they were doing things that weren't the Nashville way.
Mm. You know, it's funny. You just mentioned Texas and we're talking music.
Austin,
and and that made me think of Stevie Ray Vaughan. Mm. I thought about him because, again, with some of these tunes, one of these guys I played with recently, he likes to sing Cold Shot. Which you probably know that song. That's from Couldn't Stand the Weather. Do you know that tune by Stevie Ray?
I know the song. I don't know how to play it.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, anyway, you just know the tune. It's a A minor blues. It's a, you know, pretty straightforward thing. Anyway, I learned that the other day and I was thinking about it. But I was actually looking for videos because, again, this is going real. So I guess... Stace always loves when we talk like this.
Yeah, he does.
So I should say Stace Johnson, it is Johnson, right? It's the last name.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, and while, before I get into that, we'll talk a little more about it, but it's like, hey, people who are listening that maybe if you're not a patron, I'm not saying you have to be a patron, but we do, if you are a patron and you're in that Facebook group, we do get into really fun conversations about music and, you know, we were talking about the BattleTech game that JT mentioned the other day, and a bunch of people ended up kind of talking about that in the comments. So if you like the kind of stuff we talk about, it's worthwhile to consider becoming a backer to be part of that group, because if you like this stuff, you'll have more people to talk to about it. But anyway, Stevie Ray tuned down a half step, which is pretty common. A lot of people do that, and he tended to do that. So when he played like a blues in E, it was actually an E flat because he was tuned down. You know, when you're playing it, it looks like E, but the actual pitch coming out is E flat. So this was an A blues, but it was actually A flat blues. And with my upright, I didn't want to tune down. Like, I don't just to play along with one song. So I'm like, I bet I can find someone doing a cover of this where they're not tuned down. And sure enough, I did. I found like a band playing Cold Shot from like 2 months ago or whatever. And they were doing it. And I'm like, oh, good. I can just play along with this as I'm practicing it. But the band were the two guys. I think I either sent you a link to this or we spoke about it on a show. There's a new Stevie Ray Vaughan biography that has come out in the past 6 months or so. And the guys that wrote that, it's Andy Allendort. Oh, it's another guy that was a big writer for the guitar magazines. As I mentioned before, I read like every single guitar magazine from like 1989 to like 1995. Like, I literally read every single issue, every word of every issue of every guitar magazine that was put out in that time. So I saw these guys' names pop up all the time. And these were the guys playing. They were doing some sort of tribute. And because they're out promoting that book, they're actually doing sort of a joint book signing, book tour, and concert. So they both are very good guitar players because they wrote for these guitar magazines. All those people that wrote for those guitar magazines were excellent players. And so they were sort of promoting the Stevie Ray Vaughan book and then doing a night of Stevie Ray Vaughan music. And I thought about that just now as you were talking about Texas, because I'm like, that's not the world that we're in necessarily, but I was like, I should see if I can get those guys on the show, because if they're, I don't know, you know, I don't know those publicists and I don't know how hard it would be to contact those, sure, those guys, but I'm like, they would be perfect.
Yeah, go for
it. They wrote a book about Stevie Ray and we always talk about music and we are always plugging people's books. Like, I should see if I can get in contact with those guys, because maybe they would want to come on the show and talk their book and talk Stevie Ray. Cause I'm sure over the course of 10 years, I think we've had some people promote musical things or books about music, but obviously we're more genre based, but I'm like, I should reach out.
I should
see if I can find. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So there, how about this for a random fact that you may not have known? So Willie goes back to Austin and he finds out that there's this booming musical community happening there. And he starts playing at this bar place that everybody's playing at, and invites Waylon down and he plays, and he starts having his picnics, right? That turn into these huge, massive concerts, and he starts doing all this stuff. And someone approaches him and says, "You know, hey, I'm thinking about doing a musical kind of TV show. Would you be interested in helping us, do the pilot and to try to sell the show?" And he said, "Sure." And so he did this, and it was a little known show called Austin City Limits. So Willie Nelson was the very first person to ever do Austin City Limits because he did the pilot.
I did not know that. Yeah. That's cool. And then as you're probably going to mention is that there's a very famous Stevie Ray.
There is, yeah.
Episode.
I have that on DVD.
Oh,
I have
so
that
good.
And I have his, I have both of his Monterey Pop Festival, recordings. The first one where he was booed off stage. And then the second one where he comes back as a conquering hero.
Wow. It's funny. Again, when I was like doing those searches for the Cold Shot, I did obviously come across some actual Stevie Ray Vaughan performances on YouTube. And I know I'm not saying anything that other people haven't said before, but man, his sound was so good. It was otherworldly good. I don't think I appreciate. I always knew it was a good sound, but being kind of a metal guitar player at the time, even though I liked Stevie Ray Vaughan, that was kind of a little bit too clean of a sound if you were like listening to, you know, Iron Maiden or something. But oh man, it was so big. It was just like this like gigantic sound, and it really struck me even as like these like YouTube videos with like poor audio quality, his sound just like, it just jumps. Yeah. Oh man, it's so good. It's totally like worthwhile. So that's a good, Austin City Limits to pull out.
It's funny because he, you know, being known for electric guitar and blues guitar, that's what he's known for. I still say that he's underrated as a singer.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love his singing. He could have been successful as just a singer, like a blues singer. He was great.
And a lot of the guitarists that I've just known in my life, like my brother and my cousin, different people, they prefer electric guitar. They will play acoustic, but they prefer electric. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of times you'll see those kinds of guitarists like Stevie Ray Vaughan, and they're constantly playing an electric guitar. And then when they do play an acoustic, it can blow your mind because they're just as good, if not better. So there's a couple of songs, you know, there's Life by the Drop, which I think was written by the drummer of Double Trouble, where he, you know, he plays an acoustic guitar throughout that. And then he did a song with Lonnie Mack, Oreo Cookie Blues, where he plays acoustic guitar. And both of those songs to me just stand out because, what is it? Someone told me that I forget what it was. Like, electric guitars are more forgiving of mistakes than acoustic guitars. Like, you can kind of cover up a mistake on an electric guitar But like if you hit the wrong note or something, it can happen so fast and no one pays attention. But with the acoustic, you can't.
Even though they're tuned the same, you really have to. And I've spent a lot of time with both. I wouldn't describe it that way. What I would describe is that with an acoustic, you're trying to get things to like really ring out, and you don't have any sustain on it. So if you kind of flub a note, it's really noticeable. Whereas an electric, I think, especially if you're playing distorted and loud, half of the job is just trying to like rein it in. it's like to make sure like you're muting with both hands so that, you know, you're not hitting notes that you're not supposed to. But you mentioned Stevie Ray's acoustic. This must have come up at some point in the 10 years that we've done this show. Are you aware, and did you ever see, and I'm sure you can YouTube it, I'm going to totally YouTube it this afternoon, that there is an MTV Unplugged with, it was early days of Unplugged, like really before it became a very popular show. And I remember seeing it when it aired. It was Stevie Ray and Joe Satriani.
No.
Not playing together. They were like, I think they were doing like a, it was an early episode of Unplugged before it got really popular. And I don't know who went first, but you know, Stevie Ray did like three songs and Joe Satriani did three songs, which was really interesting because I think they were like, this is the guitar player's night. I think that was like sort of the link between them, but obviously you can't get further apart than those two guitar players. It was really interesting because they're both known for their electric playing, and Satriani had that Flying in a Blue Dream album that just came out, and he actually sings a couple of songs on that album, and Satriani's not the strongest singer, but he was fine. He acquitted himself well, but it was kind of more of a mellow thing for Satriani because he didn't try to play electric on an acoustic. He just did these acoustic songs. I think he might have done some altered tunings. He played banjo on a song too, and that was kind of cool because that album had some banjo on it. So Satriani did his kind of more mellow thing, and Stevie Ray did what you said. I think he was playing a big guild, and I think it was a 12 string. I think he had some like big 12 string guild, and he just destroyed it, man. It was awesome. He might have done like he might have done Pride and Joy on it, like by himself, no band, but doing like all those like riffs from Pride and Joy, you know, all that stuff with like the open string and everything, just killing it on a 12 string. And you know, he used such thick strings, and a 12 string is hard to play to begin with. I mean, it looked like he was playing a telephone pole with like the, it was crazy. It's really, I haven't seen it in a million years, but that is my memory of it, is that he came out and did Pride and Joy, and maybe he did, what is it called, Life by the Drop? He might've done that too. That would make sense. But yeah, I think that was around the time that the, what's the album with Crossfire and stuff on? Because that was sort of like when he got cleaned up and everything. It was probably not long before he
called Crossfire.
It sure could have been.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but it's that one. Oh, Instep. It's called Instep. That's okay. The name of that app. Yeah.
We're going way down the ditch now. There, with a lot of guitarists, there's this thought that in order to get the right sound, that bluesy sound, you have to use the thick strings. And I remember ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons, talking about how he thought that. And so, you know, he would always play with really thick strings on his guitar. And he met B.B. King. And he said he was ridiculously nervous. And, you know, they were going to play together or something like that. And B.B. King said, I really like your music. And, you know, B.B. King, his thing was he wanted to play with everybody. Mm-hmm. And he talked about that a lot in his interviews. He's like, I have sought out everyone I could possibly find to play music with, just because, you know, I want to play with different people, and I want to experience how everybody plays their music and has music. So Billy sits down with him, and B.B. King says, may I see your guitar? And Billy hands it over, and he kind of plays a couple notes, and he's like, may I ask you a question? He's like, sure. You can ask me anything you want. You're B.B. King. And he says, Why are you killing yourself with these strings? And Billy explains, he's like, well, you know, I'm playing blues and I want to make sure I get that sound. And B.B. King just kind of laughed and said, you don't need the thick strings for that. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have thick strings on Lucille.
No.
So that was kind of like an education for Billy. He's like, apparently I don't need to kill my fingers with these super thick strings. I can still get the sound.
I think tone really on any instrument, but in regards to guitars and electric guitars specifically, there's so many different things that affect the tone. And I think, again, the cliche is it comes from your hand, and there's certainly truth to that. And then in the end, that probably is the biggest thing, but it's your instrument and it's the strings and it's the type, what material are the strings made out of? How thick are the strings? Are you using a pick? Are you using your fingers? What kind of pick are you using? Are you using a plastic pick or are you using like a tortoiseshell pick? What kind of amp are you using? What kind of settings do you use on the amp? Are you using any pedals? If you use these pedals, then run them in this. Like there are, so I think as, particularly as guitar players search for their tone, it is kind of probably a constant state of experimentation, and you'll eventually kind of arrive at a tone that you like, but you're probably always tweaking it a little bit here and there. So yeah, it does. There isn't necessarily like it must be thick strings or it must be this or it must be that, but it's like, I bet a lot of it is if you're going to use thinner strings, then maybe you want like a slightly different setting on your amp, or maybe you want to use a certain kind of overdrive pedal or something. Although I don't think B.B. King used any of that stuff. I think B.B. King just plugged his guitar into his amp and that was the end of it. But you know, you do the settings a little bit differently. So it's a lot. It's sort of surprising how much what these things that seem like small things will affect the overall tone and then how you play, you know? So again, I think it's a constant search, and a lot of, you know, the guitar tones that you love to hear, you know, you can have two guitar players that maybe even sound similar and they may have a completely different setup, like different kind of guitar, different kind of strings, different kind of amp, different kind of, so it's all just a, you know, an exploration, into getting that sound. I think to maybe pivot to another topic, but it's still about music. So we've obviously in our community, The Mandalorian is a big topic of discussion online. And I want to mention the music, which I have seen written about quite a bit. And obviously John Williams is not doing the score for this, but it's I think it's Ludwig. Oh boy, I'll have to look it up to get his exact name. But I love the music in The Mandalorian. I don't know if you've kind of been thinking about it or anything, or if you have any thoughts about the music of The Mandalorian, but I have really enjoyed the music so far. Do you have any thoughts on The Mandalorian music?
I have also enjoyed it. I actually looked up that theme song and had it on and was playing it on YouTube at one point.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see if we can find this fella's name. Yes, Ludwig Göransson, and he's got the umlaut above the O. So he is Eastern European of some variety. I like it because it's, you know, it's still got the sort of epic orchestral thing. But I like that it's, you know, that obviously it's got a little bit of the spaghetti Western thing going on. But I like for Star Wars especially, you do hear a little bit of electronic, like subtle. It's subtle. It's not like a pure techno kind of a thing, but there are some electronics, there are some sort of manipulation of acoustic instruments to make them sound a little different. Like I believe that sort of, I don't even know if you can really call it a theme because it's so short, but like when the words pop up there, I believe that is a recorder, you know, like the kind of instrument you played in third grade, but I think it's, you know, processed quite a bit with various effects and what have you. And so I just think it's very imaginative, and it's Star Wars, like it fits, but it's not It's not just like a John Williams ripoff. So sure. I think that's been a really strong aspect of the show so far. So I've been digging listening. Now, did you say you listened to that on YouTube, or do they have that stuff up on Spotify?
It's
or what
probably on Spotify. That was during the period where I didn't want to change what my Spotify was feeding me.
Right.
Because I had listened to The Echo in the Canyon and it was still feeding me really good songs. So right. I looked it up on YouTube and listened to it there.
Yeah, YouTube's good for that. You can find anything like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's cool. Now, we haven't really spoken much about The Mandalorian. They are up to episode 5. I'll ask, are you up to date, or are you
how far
along? Yep. I realized that I've now, although I wanted to save it to watch at night or watch over the weekend, it's like, no, I have to watch this when I get home from work on Friday because I did not, and I, you know, I don't know how deep we want to go into it, maybe not deep at all.
Do you want to put
a
spoiler thing on this?
We can. Well, I will say this. Look,
because I know there's at least one patron who's posted the fact that he isn't watching it. Like he hasn't gotten it yet.
I will say, Patrick and I, even when we do talk about something like this, we tend to not be too spoilery. But if you have not watched The Mandalorian yet, perhaps proceed with caution from this point on. I don't think you could have been online in the past month and not come across a Baby Yoda, though. Like, everyone has to know about Baby Yoda. But I think about that because if you watch the first episode of The Mandalorian, now I didn't go online at all that day before I watched it. I just watched it. I would have been angry if that was spoiled for me. Like, that was such a good reveal.
Well, and I told you that I saw a GIF of that on Twitter.
Yes.
Didn't know what it was.
Right.
I just saw it as it was kind of scrolling through Twitter. There was a GIF, and I was like, I wonder what that is. Like, it didn't even register to me that that was Mandalorian. And then when I saw the Mandalorian, I went, oh.
Yeah, that would have annoyed me, though, too. Like, even having any, because it's so, yeah, I guess we're totally, you know, spoiling the first episode here, but it's, it really is kind of just like a surprise. Like, you know, he's searching for his bounty and you just see the Yoda ears pop out and you're like, oh, no way. And that was like a great moment. So I would have been annoyed if I like went in sort of thinking about a Yoda type creature at all. Like, that was the furthest thing from my mind when that popped up. So I liked that. So I am careful going online before I've watched the most recent episodes, because I love Star Wars and I don't want to be spoiled. I think, you know, that's kind of a long history in Star Wars, is having kind of reveals and things. And I would, as much as I can, I'd like to watch them with fresh eyes and not, because I did get spoiled on the Han Solo movie. Like, I knew Darth Maul was going to be in that, and that sucked. I hated that was spoiled for me.
Did I spoil that for you?
No, I was that's the one Star Wars movie that I did not see on opening weekend. I couldn't, you know, I was just busy that one weekend when it came out, and I had to wait till the following weekend. And I was not looking for stuff. It came up and they had a picture of Darth Maul and they literally spoiled it in the title too.
Yeah.
Of the post. And I'm just like, fuck. Like, I was so mad about that. Cause that would have probably been a nicer feature of that movie if I didn't know that.
Yeah. Cause I had that moment where
yeah. And I didn't, I knew it was coming. I didn't know it was coming at that part. So it was still fun. But it would have been more enjoyable without the spoiler. So I have been trying to just kind of watch them as they come out, and I don't know. I'm enjoying the show very much. I've seen you post some things about it. I know that I think for the most part you're enjoying it so far too.
Yeah, but before we go down there, I want to down the spoiler route. Did you see the story about John Boyega? I think that's how his name is pronounced. about.
I saw a headline about him not wanting to be Disney Plus or something. Was that
the, no? The thing is that his script for The Rise of Skywalker, he left it under his bed, and a maid or a cleaning crew or something came through, found it, didn't really understand what it was, gave it to somebody who put it up on eBay. And they put it up on eBay for like $50. And Disney has, I guess, a team of people scouring the internet, making sure that shit like that doesn't happen. Saw it, bought it for $50, and got it without the script getting out.
Wow.
But, and originally they didn't say who it was that accidentally lost their script. But then he came forward and said, shit, it was me. I'm sorry. But apparently, like, the people who had it didn't really understand what it was.
Right. See, now I was under the impression that with that stuff that they wouldn't even let the scripts leave.
They normally don't. They normally don't. They didn't quite explain how or why he had it where he had it. They were talking about how they aren't, while they do have a lot of security on the Star Wars movies, apparently they don't have the Marvel level, which the Marvel way is no one gets the script.
Mm-hmm.
No one gets the script. So Chris Evans shows up to play Captain America. They hand him some pages of what he is going to do. Right. And among the pages are like, so you know how in the trailers a lot of times you'll see something that is not in the movie?
Right.
So the one that always stands out to me is Iron Man 2. The trailer showed Tony and Natasha like at a bar or at the bar at his birthday party or something laughing, and she's wearing the Iron Man gauntlet and she's shooting it.
Right.
That is not in the movie anywhere. But it was shot and it was done. So the point is there are pages that are given to the actor or the actress and they actually shoot a bunch of things. The actor or the actress doesn't know what makes it into the movie and what doesn't.
Sure.
And they do that on purpose because of spoilers. So, so apparently they are not doing that with Star Wars, but some people are suggesting that they should have.
Yeah. I forgot about that with the Iron Man 2 thing because I did rewatch that. I guess it's probably 2 years ago now. I rewatched all the Marvel stuff before Infinity War came out. And I watched that. That might have been up on one of the streaming services, I think. But I remember when I was kind of looking this stuff up and what order to watch it in, that there's like a still, it was like a promotional shot of like Natasha with the gauntlet and, you know, Tony helping her aim it or whatever. And I do remember watching the movie and like, that scene's not there. And I didn't really think much of it after the fact, but I remember that in the promotional materials quite a bit. And yeah, I guess that it just got cut. What have you. But
Hold on. It's not that it got cut. What I'm saying is they actually shoot intentionally things that are never going to make it into the movie. Like that. It never was intended to be in the movie, but they shoot it. That way they know where spoilers come from.
Okay.
Or it's a complete misinformation campaign.
Right.
So another great example is that there was an entire scene shot where Ed Norton's Bruce Banner commits suicide.
What? in that Hulk movie?
Yes. There was a scene where he goes up and he's somewhere in Antarctica or something like that. And he's going out into the middle of nowhere and he puts a gun in his mouth and he pulls the trigger. And you may remember that there's a line in, it's either Infinity War or Endgame, where Bruce Banner, Mark Ruffalo says, and it's either that or one of the other Avengers movies where he says, you know, I put a gun in my mouth and he spit the bullet out. Well, that was a scene that they actually shot with Ed Norton. where he puts the gun in his mouth and he pulls the trigger, but Hulk stops it from happening and spits the bullet out. And then when they pull back, you see Captain America's shield. And it was supposed to be Hulk finds Cap.
Okay.
They shot it. They did the whole thing. They never, ever put it in anything.
See, that's one I haven't watched in a long time. I watched that when it came out, and I haven't really watched it since then. Although it is a canon Marvel movie, for sure. That's also like the Rogue One had a lot of stuff that was in the trailer that didn't make it, but that I don't think was on purpose. I think that was they brought Tony Gilroy in to fit, and so that was just like they just made a different movie, basically. Yeah. Like they had like an hour's worth of footage that was totally different.
So we're running out of time, but when we talk about The Mandalorian, I am enjoying it. It's kind of funny. I liked episode 4 a lot.
Yes, I think
that
that's
seems
my favorite
to be a controversial episode. There are people who don't like that and people who do like that. But when I say controversial, I mean everybody still loves this show almost universally. Like this, there's
for
lots
the most
of
part, I have...
there's lots of articles out there talking about how Baby Yoda specifically has brought people together.
Yes, I would agree with that.
You definitely have people going, "Oh my fucking god, it's not Yoda." Know the timeline. Right. Know the time. And it's like, or you could just get a life.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know. Yeah. No one has ever said what Yoda's species is. So shut the fuck up. It's baby Yoda.
Right.
Until they give us actual canon answers, it's baby Yoda. And they're like, oh, it's the child. Whatever. I don't give a shit. It's baby Yoda.
It's baby Yoda. Yes.
Episode 4, I liked because it, so Gina Carano?
Carano.
Is in it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did not know she's an MMA fighter.
Yep.
And she actually has some movies out there that she's done. Like action
movies. I watched one of them.
I went and watched one, Haywire. It's like her first.
Yes.
And you want to talk about some star power?
Yeah.
For a debut movie like that's supposed to the spark her career, you have Channing Tatum in it. You have Ewan McGregor. You had, was it Bill Paxton? Was
Antonio
in it.
Banderas.
Antonio
was in
Banderas.
It.
Michael Douglas.
She basically beats the hell out of like
all of
10
them.
Yeah. Men.
Yeah. Oh my God. She's such a badass. So
I enjoyed that movie.
It was
really
cool to see her as a bounty hunter. Well, not a bounty hunter, but she's like a resistance fighter or something. Like
right.
Former, whatever. Would they call her a shock trooper?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yes.
I hope that she comes back because I really liked her character.
Yes, I think she added quite a bit to the show, so I would definitely like to see her appear in more episodes. I've liked them all so far, but I think that's my favorite episode so far. I think that was the best one. So, now you watched Haywire. Was that streaming anywhere, or did you rent it?
I bought it because it was on sale. It was stupid cheap. If you Prime had a bunch of stuff that was like. I was able to get John Wick Chapter 3 for $9. I was able to get a bunch of different ones for like between $5 and $10. They had them on sale for either Black Friday or Cyber Monday.
Okay.
They had a bunch of
them. Yeah, I saw that movie. Like that movie came out like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not a newish movie. It was a while ago. Yeah. So
but she was a total
badass. I remember liking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
So here's my spoiler. While I liked and enjoyed episode 5, I felt that it was a cop-out to go to Tatooine. You have an entire galaxy to explore. You have tons of worlds that you can go to. Stop fucking going back to Tatooine.
I still enjoyed it. I felt like it was the weakest of the 5 so far. Which I was like a little disappointed at the end because it was Filoni wrote that one and Filoni directed that episode. So I was kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, Filoni did this one. And like, it was like kind of my least favorite of the, it's still good. You know, I'm looking forward to, is it 8 episodes or 10? I don't know. I think it's 8. So that was episode 5. So we only have 3 more episodes. So I'm looking forward to the last 3 coming out. And then going back and then binging it all, like watching all 10 in a row. That's my plan. And, you know, that is the only danger of releasing it week to week, or I shouldn't say only, but it's one of the dangers is that if you have kind of a so-so episode people will be like, oh, well, that was horrible.
and that's what happened.
Then you'll get negative press for a week.
You had some people that I know and like on Facebook complaining about episode 4.
I think I know exactly who you're talking
about.
And
then saying episode 5 was awesome. And then other people complaining about episode 5. So it was like a flip-flop.
I wouldn't complain about it, but I would just say, like, if we're, you know, I don't know, we have a podcast where we talk about this stuff. So if we're ranking episodes, like, I would put number 5 so far at the bottom. But then again, we may watch this whole 8 episodes in a row again, and 5 may come out being a lot stronger when it's in the context of what comes after it, you know, so who knows. But it's been good. I've been enjoying it. So I'm happy to have a live action Star Wars. So
me too. So.
Okay.
So spoilers over. I want to throw out that I still haven't really done much with Disney Plus. I posted this on the Patreons page. I have watched The Black Hole and The Sign of Zorro.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's like it. I tried to watch their, they have The Story of Robin Hood. Oh my God, what a terrible movie. Like, I don't even remember that movie. No wonder I don't remember it, because it's terrible and I love Robin Hood. So what's funny to me is The Black Hole, it seems to be a polarizing movie with people. It got panned when it came out. And critically, it did not get a lot of love. And I don't even think it made at the box office. I don't feel like it made a whole lot of money. It may not have even made back its budget. It did not do well. But I feel like it's a cult classic with a lot of folks like me. Like, I remember that movie very fondly, and I watched it, and I loved it, because I just remember it. It feels to me like one of the last kind of epic, sprawling science fiction productions. Like, it's the end of an era. Star Wars came out before it, I believe, but did things completely different. Like, this is the last one where they did, you know, the huge matte kind of backgrounds that they merged the scene with the matte painting kind of stuff. It just feels more epic. It feels like that when you watch it now, it kind of feels like a throwback to like Forbidden Planet, those kinds of epic science fiction movies. I know that just the stuff I read online is that people don't like it because it gets all the science wrong. That has never been something that bothers me.
Yeah.
I just enjoy the story. I enjoy the spectacle and the epic. It's kind of funny because on the flip side, like the Transformers movies, I hate, because I just think they're completely stupid. But for different reasons. It's not like they get the science wrong. I just feel like they're stupid. Like they're really poorly written, stupid movies. Send your hatred to @ATFMB on Twitter.com or @ATFMB on Facebook.com. But The Black Hole, just for whatever reason, I continue to enjoy it. But what's funny is the trailer dropped for Mulan, the live action Mulan. That, again, it feels like a big spectacle kind of series. I think it's a series, right? It's going to be a TV series on Disney Plus. It feels like that epic spectacle kind of series that we're now used to with like Game of Thrones and different things. Witcher is coming out soon. I'm hoping that's going to be huge. I enjoyed the trailer. I shared the trailer. And it's funny to me that someone, and we know this someone, it's not going to be really difficult to figure out who I'm talking about if you want to go online, said, oh my God, the Mulan trailer is so great. They're using the wrong horses.
I think I know who that is.
And it's like, really? You can't just enjoy it for what this is my whole thing that I go back to over and over again. This is why we can't have nice things.
Yes.
They used the wrong horses. Okay. No one else knows that. No one else knows that they used the wrong horses. I'm sorry. I joked about this on Facebook not too long ago. I will watch something. I will enjoy it immensely. Someone else will say, really? Really? You enjoyed that? You enjoyed that? It was a travesty. The stitching on their quote unquote authentic leather armor was modern stitching. And you enjoyed that? It's like, how the fuck did you see the stitching on the armor? Did you freeze frame it and like slowly inch it forward to see the stitching on the armor?
Yeah. I would be critical other than the fact that if there's a music thing that's really bad, it'll bump me too. So I guess we all have our little niches that of things that'll bother us. So, if it's like someone playing the guitar and they're like moving their fretting hand like up and down like the whole time, it's like, that's not what you do on the guitar. So I guess it depends on how good or bad it is. But all right.
I want to throw out last things here real quick. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel just dropped yesterday. So that's now on Prime. You had sent out a link with a bunch of things that are coming to Prime.
Yeah.
So Expanse, The Expanse is coming back soon. Yeah. There's a couple other things I think dropping. And then The Witcher's coming on Netflix.
Yeah, it's a lot coming out. Yeah.
Crisis is hitting starting tomorrow as we're recording this. The Black Widow trailer came out. That looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware of this. CBS on the regular television network. They're doing now this thing where they show their logo and then the logo changes into the Starfleet logo.
Interesting. So I guess they're going to be bringing Discovery to regular CBS.
Probably. I don't know. They've done that with The Good Fight. So they actually showed the first season of The Good Fight on regular CBS, which I thought was very interesting. That's a show that I enjoy because I loved The Good Wife. I thought that was just such a ridiculously smartly written television show. I always point to certain things for dialogue. That was one of the shows that I thought was smartly written, smart dialogue, just like Gilmore Girls, just like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. So smart, so sharp on the dialogue. So I don't know. Maybe they'll show some of Discovery. Maybe they'll show something else. They might do like they did with Discovery. They might show like the first episode of Picard.
Oh, interesting.
To try to get you to jump over to CBS All Access.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's just so much stuff happening right now. We talked about this before. There's so much stuff out there. It's hard to keep up with all of it.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that you can just pick the best stuff, or the stuff that appeals to you most. Because, like, yeah, I'm watching The Mandalorian, and I'm watching other little docs and things when I'm like, oh, well, The Expanse is coming. I'll watch that. I still haven't watched the recent season of The Dragon Prince, so that's sitting there waiting for me.
I just finished it. Oh, my God.
Okay, don't say anything. I haven't seen it yet. All right. I'm sure that's next on my – I didn't start it yet because I was watching Star Wars Resistance, and that was sort of my animated show, and I just finished that this week. So I am planning on jumping into The Dragon Prince.
Please go watch us when we talk about it.
I will definitely – but by the next time we talk, I'm sure I'll have seen it.
Please.
So, there you go.
So we talked about this beforehand. Is this our last episode of the year?
I think it's going to be because this will pop like the week before Christmas, unless we decide we want to put, but I think in the past we have not put out episodes Christmas week
and New Year's because it's just the way they fall. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think the Tuesdays are, I think it's Christmas Eve is Tuesday and New Year's Eve is Tuesday. I believe that's how it falls on the calendar. So, I would say that we are probably not going to unless you call me and like, yeah, let's pop one out. And if you wanted to do that, that's fine. But I think for the most part, it's probably not going to be. So this episode will go live on the 17th. So if we break over the break, then our next episode will be the 7th and we'll be of January and we'll be in the new year. So that I think is what the plan is, unless we decide to change the plan. But that's usually how we have done it in the past, I think.
In that case, happy holidays.
Yes. Yes. And to you too. And to all of our listeners. Thank you. Again, we really dig the Facebook group for the patrons. And even if you're listening and you're not that's we love you too. But but we really enjoy interacting with everybody over there. And
it's easier.
It's this nice little community.
Yeah, it's easier because it's a platform that we use more. Like the Patreon platform to me is awkward.
In terms of like social media and communication.
Or doing anything
it's a great
on it, yeah.
Yeah. In terms of like setting it up to, let people back us, it's great.
No, I'm just talking about communication. I'm talking about like writing things there and doing things there because I'm already over on Facebook. I'm already doing stuff over there. It's easier for me to just flip to the patron group and post something.
I agree. Me too. So if you want to become part of that group, it's patreon.com/functionalnerds. Do $1 a month and you have access to that. And it's not a ton of people that are over there. So it's pretty nice because, I feel like I'll post things there that I wouldn't post on my regular feed
because
I know it's just people, you know, I'm friends with lots of different people. So I'm just like, no one cares about this or whatever. So it's nice when I could just post something that I know the people that are over there are going to enjoy and maybe we'll spark a little conversation. So it's I think it's been very enjoyable for Patrick and I. I think it is for the people that are over there who post their own things too. So you can post stuff there. I guarantee if you post something that's we talk about on this show, you will get a nice conversation started yep. in that group. So if that is the kind of thing that appeals to you, check it out. So there you go. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you had a good 2019 and we will probably talk to you next in 2020. So thanks for listening. Thanks for backing us and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. And I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.